because Google knows to give you pizza near you. This is a service you choose to use that you don't have to use.
That's our young listener
in
Travis,
a different way.
In Nashville, that's Travis's point. You know, make my life easier. Bring it on.
And I think it was Michael who was the next caller. I think is listening to this kind of drumbeat of fear about this that we hear in media. And frankly, this is part of it. I just came back from seeing a pilgrimage to the Gutenberg Museum in Germany.
Okay.
And you know, I'm reminded that when new technologies come, change comes. And with change comes fear and comes a desire to, by some, to resist it. But I think that we live in a great danger here, that if we try too hard to regulate this magnificent tool of publicness we have in the Internet, a tool that, and that Facebook will soon say a billion people are using to share with each other and connect with each other, a tool in Twitter and Facebook that people use to help them create revolutions, a tool that a mere hashtag on Twitter created Occupy Wall Street. These are incredible tools. And to try to define them only in the legacy of the past and to try to look only at the fear and only at the worst case, which is how this show's predicated, is, oh my God, privacy changes.
Hey, it's got a question mark. Let's keep it totally straight. We're asking.
Let's also have the conversation, though I haven't heard anything yet except from Stephen. There are great benefits to this. So we need to have a very rational, calm discussion about what's the actual harm of you being given a pizza ad.
We're asking all the way through about whether the conveniences outweigh what is a greater sort of exposition on the privacy.
Not just convenience, Tom. It's far more than convenience. This is a Gutenberg press in every hand.
Tell us about that. More than convenience. What does that mean? Like, take us out. Where does this really take us beyond just convenience of the pizza near me?
Well, I don't know yet, because we're at the very beginning of this. The change that we think is coming quickly, I think is coming actually very slowly. We're at the very beginning of it. I'll go back to Gutenberg. John Naughton, who's a columnist on The Observer in London, asks us to imagine we're a pollster in 1472 in Mainz, asking people, do you think this thing is going to cause the disruption of the Catholic Church, the Reformation, the scientific revolution, a change of education, and all this? You think, nah. So I don't know where it goes, is the honest answer, Tom. But I think that we can look at very recent examples of how people have used these tools, that we want to leave them unregulated. The problem with SOPA was that it was an effort to change the architecture of the net. Vivian Reding, the vice president of the European Commission in Europe, just released a whole proposed slate of privacy regulations that I think EPIC would probably like most of them, that I find frightening because they're trying to change the architecture of the net around this fear and this non-specific view of possible harm, when what it's going to do is change the architecture of the net that people are using for the power to disrupt institutions such as government, such as media.
Right.
And so I think, again, the Arab Spring, Occupy Wall Street, things like that are small little beginning indicators of how this is more than just sharing what you have for breakfast.
This is about
a tool of people connecting with each other.
Yeah, it's a big list. We grant you that. And we're listening to that. Our ears are open. But you have to forgive us on the other side if we're really thinking about what it means for privacy at the same time. Though you remind
us,
Jeff.
Tom, all I'm asking you to do, we've had this conversation before, and I would ask you to also bring in the benefits of this tool and the dangers to the tool of premature regulation. That's where I'm concerned here.
That's why you're here, my friend. Remind us of your 1890 story about Kodak and the national parks.
So technology does bring in changes that cause, again, fear and disruption. And so when the Kodak camera was invented in 1890, President Teddy Roosevelt decreed that Kodaking was outlawed in parks. Now, this is very important to the discussion of privacy because it was in 1890 that Brandeis and Warren wrote the first major legal essay.
Why did he ban them, though, first? Why?
Why did he ban them? Because it was new and people were afraid their pictures were going to be taken and put in the penny press. Now, of course, we die for having our pictures taken. But and this was in a public place.
Yeah.
It's a technology change. What really is it? Here's the bigger question, Tom. What's really happening, forget the regulation, forget the fear, is that we're trying to renegotiate our norms as a society. We're trying to figure out how to connect with each other in a way that we will consider civilized and proper and true. So when the camera came out, people said, oh my God, people could take a picture of me when I don't expect it. And then we figured out that,
park,
no, there are times.
By a grizzly bear,
Right. There are times when, yes, you're in public, somebody takes a picture, it's okay. If you're in private, people ask. We negotiated our norms, so the camera is now a very friendly part of society, even as all of us have them on our phones.
Jeff, hold that thought right there. Mark Rotenberg, if you would. Look, the implication here is you're trying to hold back progress, evolution, technology. You're trying to hold back the Reformation with these concerns.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff is like deeply confused on a critical point here. There's a huge difference between talking about freedom of the Internet, which is something that I've done pretty much since the Internet became available to the public, and talking about the practices of particular company that's collecting an extraordinary amount of personal information on individuals and actually threatening that freedom. And I think we really need to separate those two issues. There's a very big difference, for example, between the freedom that a person has to go online and express their views. Oftentimes, you know, they may be controversial, and a company deciding that it has the right to aggregate and to sell as much data on that individual as it can. And I think to have the conversation you want to have today, you know, we need to focus on that second issue, because if we don't understand that second issue, that first value, which both Jeff and I are concerned about, actually will be lost. And we know this, in fact, already, because a lot of the data that's being gathered by companies like Google and Facebook becomes available to government agencies. We've just undertaken an open government lawsuit involving the social monitoring of networks by federal agencies here in Washington.
Mark Rittenbrook, hold the thought there. We're up against a break. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Google and Facebook and your privacy. The rules are changing. They say it's great for you. We're asking, is it? Stephen Levy's with us, senior writer with Wired magazine, author of In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives. Mark Rotenberg is here. He's executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. They're still tussling over this. He says he hopes it never comes out that it may be illegal. Jeff Jarvis is with us, author of What Would Google Do? And Public Parts, his new book, How Sharing in the Digital Age Improves the Way We Work and Live. A lot of people joining us online. Yar says resistance is futile. You will be assimilated. Hugh says, maybe listening to Travis in Nashville, says don't trust anyone under 30. But Travis likes what he gets from Google and Facebook and their products. Jeff, Mark, Stephen, I'll come to you. Stephen, San Diego, California first. You're on the air, Stephen.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty well. What do you think?
Well, I had a scenario that I wanted to offer these guys. What if I'm talking to a friend through email, Gmail, and we're talking about something private, like, let's say, I don't know, adultery.
It's been done.
And I go into work later on, and I log into Google, and up come some ads for divorce lawyers. Those are the kinds of things I'm worried about. We don't know what they're going to do with this data. Who are they going to give it to? How deeply are they going to look into our data?
Let me pick that one up. Stephen Levy, is that a realistic possibility? You have an email exchange or a few of them about adultery? You're going to get ads for divorce lawyers? Is it possible?
I hope Google, you know, would be sensitive to things like that. But in theory, you know, that's not out of the question there. I think that if you look at the behavior of Google and Facebook there, I think that one problem that I see is they're being very aggressive about saying, here's our vision for what you're going to like, and we're going to be aggressive about pushing that. I actually think that it would be to both companies' benefits if they were able to give us this trade-off, you know, and basically say, okay, if you want to turn this on, here's the good stuff that will happen.
Right.
Why don't you try it out and see if these benefits are actually worth our making use of this information.
Yeah, but you do that and immediately Facebook isn't worth $100 billion. It's worth 50 or 20. I mean, it's based.
Well, I mean,
they're
worth a lot without making everyone do the timeline, right? So, you know, my feeling is that I'm sort of between Mark and Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should be really well informed about where these trade-offs are, what we're getting in order for these places to have our information. And I think we should be able to really very easily set the slider for how private we want to be there.
That would be awesome, but it's not the deal. I mean, it's not their business
model. Well, to a certain degree, it is the deal, because if people really don't like it, they're going to abandon these companies there, and people talk about it there. You know, we talk about Facebook and Google, like, you know, they're there forever. But at one point, people thought that AOL was, you know, really, you know, had everything locked in, and the internet is AOL there.
Yeah.
MySpace had many, many more users than Facebook.
But the bigger they get, the harder to abandon. But I take your point. Lori in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say hi to Stephen. Long-time fan since Hackers.
All right.
Oh, thank you.
Fan in Pittsburgh. What do you think, Lori?
Okay, I'm a long-time Facebook and Google person, and normally I like them. Timeline is okay. It's easy to remove stuff from Timeline. I think people are overly worried about it.
Okay.
I have a much bigger issue with Google, and that's because, like every woman friend of mine, Google has decided we are men, and we'd rather not be men.
What do you mean, it's decided you're men? You got a woman's name, Lori.
Yes, okay. They have this thing now to see, Google makes a bunch of assumptions about you based on your searches. They make assumptions about your gender.
Yep.
They make assumptions about your age. And they're usually pretty close on age, but they miss gender completely because I guess they have some software set up to say if this person is looking for cosmetics and shoes and food and childcare, obviously this is a woman.
Okay.
And if it's somebody looking up cars and science fiction and astronomy, it's obviously a man.
So they've got you pegged as a man. Okay.
Yes. All of my woman friends are now male according to Google.
So what's the big deal? Is it just that you're not getting the service you'd like? That's not an invasion of privacy. It's just a sort of misapprehension of who you are.
Okay, but here's the problem. Say that you're Google and you're selling your assumptions about people, and your assumptions about people are often wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's my issue. Basically, to some degree, Google. Now, what Google could do, for example, is they could say they could give everybody the option, say opt in. Okay, say that you're this, you know, you're in this age group, you're this gender, you live in this area.
Yep.
That way. You know, and they certainly have the capability for that rather than making wrong